Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lager. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's another one of our special January 20th, 2015, beginning of the year shows. We've got one of our favorite legends, Matthias Neidhart of Be United, who's joined us. We're going to talk a lot about how he got started importing beer, some of the special things that he's doing, and also finish up talking about beer distillates, a.k.a. spirits. So thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, and they have a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together, distributing a lot of the great beers that we talk about on the show. If you're interested in following on Twitter, Maggie's there at @beer_sessions, and she'll be tweeting live throughout the show. So we've got a great panel tonight. I'm going to give a little backstory. So Matthias Neidhart was one of the first importers of specialty beers that we got to know in the 90s. But he's also got this family tree of some really cool guys that work for him. There's a bar in Brooklyn called The Diamond. Dave Pollock was one of the Be United reps. Our good buddy Justin Phillips was with us, was a rep for a long time, and he had a great name with the Beer Table and now Beer Table to Go. So it's Matthias is one of those guys, and you look at certain chefs like Danielle, you know, they always say, oh, where are his chefs working now? Well, they're all the top chefs in America. Well, it seems like Matthias has cultivated some really great beer people. And he's got Michael Opalinski, who's a good buddy, who's one of his New York City reps now. And it's been a great experience, you know, knowing Matthias and your Be United crew. So, Matthias, welcome to the show, and give us a little background on your philosophy of how you've built these great teams and you know, teams of beers that you import, as well as these great young men that have worked for you.
Thank you, Jimmy. It's Matthias. We actually started 20 years ago, 1995. Like this. And from the beginning, and nothing really has changed, and this will hopefully stay with us for the rest of our lives, is our company has always been about the flavors and aromas. We were only interested in, and we started with beer, in those beers that exhibited the most complex flavors and aromas of their respective styles. The late Michael Jackson was for us a huge guidance. Everybody in our company had to read his books to get to know each brewery, his thinking or the thinking about flavors and aromas. And so very often I talked to him about his experience, his thinking about wonderful beers, and so he, for many years, he was our guide mentally and conceptually. Over time, we realized that what happened or what's happening in the world of beer also happens in other alcoholic beverage segments. The world of ciders or so, we entered that world 2 years later, like 1997 or so. Same thing there. There is a segment up there that is very, very unique because it these ciders exhibit incredible flavors and aromas. Then the world of mead, honey fermenting beverages. So we entered that world 1998, very, very early. Same thing. There are meads out there that are absolutely fantastic in terms of very complex flavors, complex aromas. And so that's the concept of Be United. And when we were able to start hiring our first people, we have, I think, a very strange interviewing process. The resume, the history of the person doesn't really matter to us. There are two things of importance to us. One is we don't really hire from inside the industry. We want to hire people that have no experience inside the industry gives us an opportunity to shape everybody in our company a certain way, shape their thinking in a certain way. And then in our interview is, the big part in our interview is they're exposed to blind tastings. It's not about figuring out the brand or the brew. It's completely irrelevant. It's just we want to test them on their ability to taste flavors and aromas and to be able to communicate those complex flavors and aromas to us, and that means to our customers, to consumers, to everybody.
That's great. I mean, Michael, you've been a rep for a few years, and you've also been the Italian specialist as well. Tell us a little bit about the portfolio that you represent and what it's been like working with Matthias.
It's been a real honor. I in the industry, Be United, as far as an importing portfolio goes, I think is but one of the highest respected, and without a doubt. Oh, this is a tough question, especially with the boss in the room.
Well, tell me about the portfolio, because you're this crazy guy. I mean, this is what I love. You went to school in Italy, and now you're representing Italian beers. And
yeah, that's how I found out about it originally. I graduated from a school in Italy and happened to hear that Justin, in fact, was leaving Be United to open Beer Table, and there was an opening position. And at the time, I was becoming very passionate about beer. Obviously, I hadn't worked at all in the – I hadn't worked at all. Forget the industry, but this was my first employment opportunity outside of school. So that's what first drew me to it. I was working on the side at Baladin while still in school. I then discovered that Be United was representing these Italian beers. Those were the craft beers that I was most familiar with, and therefore was really impressed by that portfolio. And then as I began to dig deeper and read some Michael Jackson books and discover some more traditional breweries outside of Italy, Germany especially, it became even more impressive, the portfolio that Be United had been building.
Hey, Matthias, how did you grow your portfolio? I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that you have so many great beers from how many countries? You know, I know Belgium, Germany, Italy, England, France. How did you do that? You know, it's amazing. And tell us more about how you went about that, because I think you have a very unique very portfolio, you know?
Well, in 1995 when we started, it was just basically me and being German, obviously, I started to talk to those German breweries that are considered world-class breweries in their category, like Schneider, like Echtschlengler, the smoked beer, and being German helped me, but being German in some instances didn't really help me. But again, that's how I started. And then when we a couple of years later, when we had the first opportunity to hire somebody, and we continued to do that, everyone in our company, every salesperson is heavily involved in that process. Every person in our company is assigned a specific research project. That can be exploring a new country. That can be exploring a new category. That can be exploring things that are going on in certain parts of the world. And each person is assigned such a project. And for the most part, each person picks, in our company, picks their own research project. And each one is accountable to the entire team of Be United International, not to me, to everybody. And whenever we meet, like three times a year, we all come together. Everybody reports on what's going in their research. And sometimes things come to fruition. It's a dead end. Sometimes it's a very, very long-term thing that will not come to fruition until many years later. And that basically keeps the innovation spirit going in our company. It's a big, big part of what we are doing. It's a big, big part of our thinking.
I also know that when you're an importer or a distributor, the public doesn't always know, you know, recognize who's behind all these brands. But I feel like as an industry person, I feel like people really say, oh, Be United, that represents quality. I mean, Justin, when you started working there, you've continued in your own establishment. You always carry a lot of Be United beers. What does Be United mean to you when you see it on a label?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's already been pretty clearly defined. It represents a huge editing process and careful tasting of a group, and a lot of research and care behind selecting everything that has gone into it. And it's definitely something that I believe in.
Yeah. All right. Well, cheers, Len. You brought some great beers in too, Matthias. So, what did you bring for us? The first beer.
And Michael will be able to explain in detail. Sure. That's from Italy, from one of our great young Italian breweries, Del Ducato, Giovanni Campari, an extraordinary brewmaster. His special Mattina.
Yep. So it's from the brewery Birrificio Del Ducato. They're out of just outside of Parma. Giovanni Campari, as Matthias mentioned, is the brewmaster there. In my opinion, one of the most talented Italian brewers brewing right now. The beer Sammattina is not entirely, though, brewed in Italy. It is a blend project between their brewery in Italy and the Eau de Bircel brewery in Belgium. So a collaboration between these two. Giovanni has worked out with Eau de Bircel to get their 18-month-old lambic. It ships down to Italy. They blend in about 10% lambic with 90% of Giovanni's Nuova Mattina, which is their saison, quite dry saison brewed with a long list of spices. If I can get them all, I think it's ginger, licorice, chamomile, coriander, green peppercorn, pink peppercorn, and I might be missing one, but I'm pretty sure I nailed them all. Once blended, it ages in bottle after fermentation process, obviously, for 12 months, and then they release it. So we sell it usually in 750s. We were really lucky this year to also get a draft shipment of it. So we have a few kegs floating around the country. So it'll be appearing on draft walls. It's already up on a few walls now. It's a pretty recent arrival, though. So it'll be popping up in the next few months on certain beer bars around the country.
It's pretty great. You know, every time I taste with you guys, there's so many beers that you have. And Zach Kinney, who's one of our homebrewers, New York City Homebrewers Guild, he's an expert taster. He leads the Beer Judge Certification Program. So what do you think of this special blend?
I think it's delicious. It's dry. It's tart. It's not overwhelmingly sour. Nice sort of like medium carbonation, very clear, pale straw. Like it's looks great. Smells great, you know. Bravo Italia, you know, it's delicious.
Matthias, how do you taste beer? I mean, there's guys like Zach who are home brewers. You know, they've studied how to judge beer. What approach do you take when you're tasting a beer?
Oh my God, when we have our sales meeting or even outside, usually when. I wait until everybody's together in our company to taste brands, but sometimes we have to hurry up or so and cannot afford to do that. And so whoever is around or so, we gather and taste. And I believe I'm the weakest link in our company as far as that is concerned. For me, what I'm looking for is the overall balance that has got to be pleasing to me. Another thing that drives me quite a bit is because we somehow have to be marked relevant too. I'm very, very open to things that taste very weird, that are very unusual, that I might not have tasted before. Give you an example. I'm not high, so high when we taste IPAs these days, because there are so many fantastic IPAs out there, and so I'm not too into that. Not to say that these are not great. No, they're wonderful, but I'm just not so much into it. But when I taste something that is very, very unusual, where people, when we taste, sometimes very often they say, this is really strange. This is weird. What the hell is it? This attracts my attention quite a bit.
It's always fun, these sampling portions of sales meetings, but it can also be a challenge for this reason. You have all this stuff on the table. Sometimes we'll taste items like a really excellent beer. Like take Matthias's example, like an IPA. The beer might have been brewed great. It's from overseas. But then you also have to consider there are so many great IPAs brewed in the United States, especially if the approach of the IPA is an American one with a big hop nose and finish and a very piney taste. So you have to ask the question, even though it's a great beer, is it something really worth bringing into the country because there's already so many great IPAs here? And then on the other side of the coin, tasting something really unique and crazy, but is it well brewed? Is it too crazy? So teetering on this edge of making sure, you know, not to bring something that's necessarily already here, but something that might just be...
For sure. Wait, okay, talking about Rauch beers now, jumping around. I had on Facebook today a friend said, oh, I just wish there was a bar I could go into and have a Rauch beer on draft. And he said, oh, at Jimmy's number 43, sometimes they have that, but they always rotate. So how did you end up being this main importer identified with Rauch beers like Echt Schlenkler?
Oh, for me, this is very very easy to answer. This is one of the classic breweries. I mean, when you speak to Michael Jackson, this was one of the breweries he always mentioned. Because the smoke beer is obviously a very small brewing segment, but there is basically only one brewery historically that is the classic one, and that's the Echt Schlenkler in Bamberg. They are a wonderful, wonderful small brewery. Some time ago, we started to bring it in bottles. Der Mürzen, which is the classic example. Michael Jackson said, if you had an opportunity to distill Echt Schlenkler Mürzen, and age it, this would be an awesome whiskey. He also said Echt Schlenkler Halles. He also said about Echt Schlenkler Mürzen or so, if you take away the smokiness of the Echt Schlenkler Mürzen, which they had never done, so they have never really brewed the Mürzen without the 100% smoked barley malt, he said if you used their recipe and not the smoked barley malt, this would be probably the best Mürzen in the world. And so it was very easy to identify, to speak to them, and they're just wonderful, wonderful people. And they started over the past 20 years, they started to become innovative within their concept of smoked beer. So they do not want to go into the world of sour beers. They do not want to go into the world of IPAs or nothing like this. They do not want to go outside the German purity law. But inside their concept, they are extremely innovative, and we love that. And the one that is on the water in our 10 container arriving here in about 10 days or so is their Fastenbier, their Lentbiers, their Echt Schlenkler Lentbiers, only available for the period of Lent from Ash Wednesday, which is, I believe, February 18th, mm-hmm. through Easter Sunday, sometime in early April or so. And it's a smoked beer, but only, for instance, 50% of the barley malt is smoked. It's unfiltered. It's quite different from the Echt Schlenkler Mürzen, from the smoked beer. Really absolutely exciting about it. 4 years ago, he created a completely new smoked beer based on oak instead of beechwood. Historically, they have always used beechwood to kiln their barley malt. And Matthias and I, we are in touch quite often. And so he knows that we are very innovative, and he said he wanted to do that. He wanted to become that too. And at one time, he talked to his brewmaster, said, why don't we use oak wood instead of beech wood to kiln our barley grain? They have their own malting unit in the brewery. And their theory was that it will not change at all. It will not change the outcome. God, he called me after they tasted it, after it came out the kiln and the brewing, and they brewed it, and said, were we dead wrong? It's completely different. And so the Echt Schlenkler Oak Smoke it's a double bock, was born, and we have it in bottles. We have it on draft every once in a while. So it's one of our really favorite breweries.
It's one of the beers that the monks can drink that for Lent and not eat food, right?
Yeah. Doppelbock, right?
That's right.
That's the inspiration. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Today's break song called Jump Rope by the Gingerlees. This is Beer Sessions Radio.
Music.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a special guest, Matthias Niedhart from Be United, and we're talking about smoked beers, rauch beers. Zach Kinney from New York City Homebrewers, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good, Jimmy. Thanks for having me here, dude.
We're tasting the rauch beers. What did you say about that?
I was just saying that I recently homebrewed a smoked Helles, inspired by the Schlenkerla Helles, which is one of my all-time favorite beers. I think you can drink it year-round. It baffles me that they don't actually use smoked malt in that beer, that it's just their yeast and their system that has been, you know,
inundated. Is that true, Matthias?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's 100% non-smoked malt, unsmoked malt, or not smoked malt. Zach said correctly, it's impacted by the yeast. The yeast over the many, many years or so has taken on this kind of smoky character, and it's the equipment itself. Just imagine you have a coffee grinder, right? And you grind your coffee in the morning. Just imagine you use a spiced coffee, be it almond, like an almond or so, and you use it all the time. Then all of a sudden you use a kind of non-spiced coffee and you use the same machine and you grind it, you will end up with almond character in there. And that's exactly the same thing that happens in the actual Engel or so. Using the same equipment impacts on the smokiness.
Yeah, I loved it. Even my wife, who's not really a smoked beer fan, she loves the Helles and she loved that homebrew. So I was like, yeah, I win. Good.
I love that beer too. I remember a few years ago you were really generous and you brought over both the Schlenkerla and the Schneider chefs, and you did some dinners in New York City. That was a really special experience. So what brought about that?
It's all about, for our company again, it's all about flavors and aromas, and there's much more to it, many more things that are part of that, especially with some of these breweries. Schneider has their own brew pub, the Weisse Bierhaus. They have one in Kelheim. They have their wonderful Weisse Brauhaus in Munich. So historically, these were the wheat beer places where the royal family brewed their wheat beer. Matthias Strom has his own brew pub or so, where he serves his beer on cask or so. Has their own food to it, and Uri get the same thing in Düsseldorf. They all have their own pub with it, have their own food with it, and I thought would be a great idea to bring over their chefs and have them prepare their original food that they pair with their food in their own restaurant or so, pub or so. And so the chef of Ürige was with us, the chef of Schneider came with us, and Echtschlenkle as well.
It was a really great experience.
So we went to Gentleman was involved, and in Philadelphia, a couple of places. It was a lot of fun.
We did a few events at Jimmy's as well.
Yeah, I mean one of the menus, it was a testicle carpaccio, and they substituted. You know what they substituted for testicle carpaccio?
You got me.
Veal brisket. So
that seems a little bit of a cheat there. I'm not sure.
But it was fun, a little bit of translating how to happen.
New York's got no balls, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. We had veal brisket instead. But so, I mean, Justin, come on, let's talk, because he's one of the guys that actually turned me on to your. I mean, years ago I bought the Einbecker beers in the 90s. Those are some of my first. Aventinus, right. I had many Oktoberfests with those.
Yep.
Justin, what were some that you used to love selling when your old days as a Be United rep?
Yeah, I mean, the whole breadth of the portfolio, you know, Matthias mentioned the things beyond the beer as well. I mean, particularly the cider was something that I got really excited about, the DuPont cider in particular. The whole thing, all the way to the South African mead, like, I mean, it's a diverse and very interesting group of...
You train people well, Matthias.
No, I mean, Justin, going back to Justin, when we we're desperate looking to hire somebody for the Northeast, for Massachusetts and Rhode Island or so. And Justin was interested in that job, and we interviewed him, and he had to go through numerous, I think, blind tasting sessions with us. But obviously, he's very, very good at identifying flavors and aromas and communicating that. And obviously, later on in his own place, beer table or so, he did an unbelievable job. But also another thing that really made him very attractive to our company, he was very open. He's, you know, and you could see it a little bit when you spoke to him. He's an entrepreneur. He is very independent. He thinks for himself. And when we discussed internally. We knew that we would lose him at one time. He's just an entrepreneur. He wants to establish his own business. But that didn't matter to us. This kind of thinking, this independent thinking, this entrepreneurial spirit, entrepreneurial risk taking, this is something that we absolutely need in our company to push our innovation spirit.
All right. Well, cheers. What's the next beer that we have, Michael?
We are now tasting the Aventinas Cuvée Barrique it's their 2014 cuvée. It is a blend of the Aventinas and the Aventinas Eisbach, both of which that have been barrel aged. If Matthias, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Aventinas Eisbach has been aged in Chardonnay barrels, mm-hmm. and the Aventinas in red wine barrels. Is correct?
I believe both in French Chardonnay barrels.
Okay.
I believe the 2014 version. The version before that we had in 2013, I think there was Pinot Noir involved. Two things to this creation by Schneider. It's just a reflection on that we are trying to push all our breweries into the world of innovation. Otherwise, we keep telling them the market in the United States is so competitive, so good. The quality of the American breweries, the established one, the new ones, is so incredibly high. If you don't keep innovating, you might be left behind in the dust or so. And Schneider really has taken that to heart, and they created their own barrel aging program. In the 2014 version, they aged the Aventinas and the Aventinas Eisbach separately, as Michael said, in French Chardonnay barrels for like 12, 14 months, then blended it together and re-fermented it with Schneider yeast. Funny story to that one, they called me 12 or 14 months ago and said they would not be able to sell this brand in Germany. And I said, what's wrong with Germany? Why can't you sell it in Germany? Except Germans would not accept it, would not like it. They would consider it sour. They would consider it infected, which in fact it is. It's supposed to be infected. And it's stale, old, and more or less disgusting. And I said, okay, that's great, great news for us, because I want everything you have.
We do like this beer. It is funny. I wanted to ask you about that, you know, because I feel like that, especially with there's an impending hop crisis, I feel like that a more American brewer is going to make German-style beers, you know, and if anything, there's people in countries like Switzerland and Germany and Italy, they're exporting all their special beers to America. You know, how do you see all that?
I think it's becoming truly global. I think there's no question about it. Small young breweries from Europe want to come to the United States, being very much attracted to the market, to the openness of the U.S. consumer, being willing to try and appreciate fantastic flavors and aromas. But I think it's now working both ways. There are a ton of U.S. breweries going abroad, going into Sweden, into Scandinavia, going into U.K., going into Italy. More and more are trying to go into Germany or so. What has happened in the United States is happening in other parts of the world. Japan, obviously, South Korea is at the forefront now of great development. So the Americans are not just taking up the battle here on their home turf. No, they are taking the battle up and going into these countries, and people love it out there in these countries. Right now, obviously, the American style IPAs, double IPAs, nobody in Europe or so knows them really well. At least not, and so it gives the Americans a great opening into those markets. So it's becoming global in terms of research development, in terms of creativity, in terms of competitive marketplaces.
You know, talk about your guys' work. I want to talk about Schneider Aventinas after the break, but you got another young guy here, George, who just started. So how did you pick him, and what special projects is he going to work on? Because he's been really helpful. You know, he comes around, talks about your beers. George, say hi. Come on.
Hi, how's it going?
He's the next guy. So you're good, but our buddy John Lumbaum, you've expanded quietly to Texas. He moved to Texas. What about George?
Yeah, we moved into Texas a couple of years ago, and we need to support the market. And John Lundbaum, who is great, he said he would like to take the challenge. He moved to Austin, and so we were put in a position to find somebody to replace him. And we ran into George. I don't really remember how you contacted us, by email or something like this.
George, tell us how you found these guys.
Well, I saw a listing for the job online, actually, on Be United's website, and I applied. And I honestly didn't think that anything would come of it, to be perfectly honest, but something did, and it was amazing. And I thought, this is too good to be true. And I went in, and I had several interviews, three interviews, in fact, and three blind tastings. And then finally, Matthias emailed me back, and I went.
What did you do before this?
I was actually in university in Scotland, at the University of St. Andrews, doing my undergrad degree there. And I worked at bottle shops there from my second year in university. So when I was legal to drink in Scotland. I was 18 at the time. So I was helping these bottle shops in St. Andrews sort of select their beer. Essentially, I was curating their selections, I guess. And then I managed one of the shops over a summer, as well as working at a brewery in St. Andrews, sort of whenever I had.
What were the most popular beers at those bottle shops in Scotland?
That's a tough question to answer, but there...
Anything interesting?
We sold a lot of the Wild Beer Company, which is a brand that Be United actually imports. They were very popular, as well as Evertown as well, which we just started importing. And German beers were also popular as well. There was a wide breadth of things, really. Although we didn't get a lot of American beer, but that did move as well, because people love IPAs, and they always wanted American beer in Scotland, which was quite funny, even though we didn't get much of it, but yeah.
Well, I'm really happy to have, you know, Matthias in with some of his current and former, you know, sales guys. And really respect the portfolio, and we're going to come back and talk more about it in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
And this one's called Cheney's Got a Gun by Mamarazzi on Beer Sessions Radio. Today's program brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. In 1996, Elknife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. There's always new membership and special opportunities. There's host parties coming up, and looking forward to May 21st. It's going to be a big HRN fundraising party. So talking about Union Beer Distributors, we've got some great portfolio. Be United. Matthias Niedhart's joining us today. So we're talking about your latest rep, this guy George, Matthias.
Yeah, we just hired him like 3 months ago, like started early November. So I remember it obviously quite well when we got his resume. So there were a couple of things that made him very interesting to us. One is he studied abroad. That is, for us, always a very, very good sign in terms of the person being able to fit into our company. I do not micromanage. I leave people out there, and maybe sometimes they think I leave them hanging, but I do not call them every day, every minute to ask for reports and how is it going or so. So I do not micromanage. So you have got you're on your own, and you have to face challenges, and you have to deal with that. And starting abroad, I think, is a great sign for me that that person has that ability. The other thing is he majored in history. I think that for us was really important. When you study history, you have got to be interested in reading. You have got to be interested in learning. It's a big part of our company, reading and learning. And I remember very well when John interviewed him, he called me and said, "We have got to hire him." He did a blind tasting on him, and George, the first thing he said, "This smells like ketchup." Now, who the hell would say in an interview when it's about serious tasting that smells like ketchup? That's for me. That for all of us showed really
because he didn't really want the job.
Yeah, that's right.
He's just goofing around.
I stand by that tasting note, by the way. I do think that beer smells like ketchup.
What's my Vicazzi? And
what beer did taste like ketchup?
It was a beer called Melchior, and it was a barley wine brewed with mustard seeds. And I think my brain sort of associated mustard with ketchup. And then I just said, "Oh, ketchup." I got them confused. I'm not really sure, but.
And so, in one of the interviews, I asked George, "So when you moved to Scotland, and the first year you obviously lived in the dorm, the second year you moved out. What was your biggest challenge when you moved out?" And his answer was for me so down to earth, but so realistic, because that's exactly what I faced when I moved out of my parents' home and went to the university. He said, "Well, we had this apartment, was great, but we had no idea. We needed water, we needed power, electricity, and we had no clue how to do it. So you have got to call somebody and get that stuff going." And I felt exactly the same way when I was like 18 or 19 and moved to a city in Germany to begin my studies. It's not about, "Oh my God, I want to shake the world." No, I have no water. I need to get water in this damn department, a compartment, and a phone. I mean, we didn't have cell phones at that time. You had got to get a phone going. And so it was really something that I knew he's pretty much down to earth.
All right. Let's jump back. So one of the beers that I drank a lot of and I used to buy a lot was the Schneider Aventinus. Tell us about that beer. I mean, it's amazing. I remember celebrating the Oktoberfest after 9/11 with artists, and I drank 8 of them, and it was the best day of my life. So tell us about the beer and what it means to you.
It's one of the classics, and it was launched by the Schneider Brewery in 1907. It was launched by the third generation, by George Schneider III. Actually, and that's for me the intriguing part, it was not George Schneider III, it was his wife. George Schneider III, unfortunately, he only lived for a very short period of time, so his wife had to take over, and she had no clue about business, but she did a masterful job running the Schneider Brewery, and she had the guts in 1907 to launch an Aventinus, a wheat double bock that was totally opposite to conventional wisdom and thinking in Germany. Bock beers and double bocks had to be lagers. Aventinus is a top fermenting beer, doesn't fit name wise into it. Usually, bocks and double bocks need to end. Have the ending OR, and it didn't have that. And usually, bock beers are named after saints, didn't have that either. And there was an outcry in the industry. People are dragged here, I think, to the courts as well. And she fought through all of it and launched it. It's a wheat double bock, about 8%, using the Schneider yeast, exactly the same yeast that they use for Schneiderweisse, primary fermentation, secondary fermentation. And fast forward to today, according to the head brewmaster of Schneider, Hans-Peter Drexler, it is the most complicated beer that they have a challenge to keep a great handle on the yeast. Aventinus is 8%, so it's a relatively high alcohol environment for the yeast. And the yeast is very, very active. It's Schneider's proprietary yeast. And the yeast simply does whatever she wants to do, no matter how how much instructions she receives from the brewmasters. And sometimes, every once in a while, it doesn't really work, and then the fermentation or so breaks down or so, and I get on the phone and I'm furious because we don't get the Aventinus that we need, that we desperately need, and Hans-Peter Drexler tells me the yeast simply doesn't want, we have got to wait until she's back until we are back in her good spirits or so, and but it just shows me, which is the beautiful thing about Aventinus, this is all life, this is not kind of a artificial or industrial beer. This is a true live beer with live yeast, live bacteria, live microbes that simply you cannot get 100% control over it. But I think it reflects in the incredible flavors and aromas of the beer.
Now, how would you compare? It happens a lot in pubs and bottle shops. How would you compare the Schneider Aventinus in bottle versus draft? There's some challenges,
right,
too.
Right, yeah. But I think it's true for almost every single draft beer versus bottled beer. Draft, in our opinion, is Aventinus, I think, is a great example, is on draft much softer, much creamier. You perceive less CO2 than in the bottle. In the bottle, in my opinion, you have a much more aggressive CO2 on the tongue. That's not the case on the draft version. The draft is, again, very, very creamy, very, 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 very much softer than the bottle version. Has a lot to do with the size of the container.
That's great. It's great to touch on these things. Listeners, if you look back, last June we did a really great piece. We went up to Be United's compound in Connecticut, and they have a side project, OEC. Later tonight, we're going to Jimmy's Number 43 to try some of the beer distillates, including the Aventinus. So there's so many great stories here, and Mateus, we appreciate your friendship, and we'll have many more stories with you. We want to jump in. Zach Kinney is our homebrewer. First, you've made a Schlenkerle Helles homebrew. Did you ever make an Aventinus homebrew?
No, that's beyond me. It's seriously. I mean it's exactly what you described. The Hefeweizen, the Weizen yeast strain that creates all those amazing flavors. Currently in my repertoire, I haven't gone there yet. I love the beer, but you combine that with the 8% environment and the homebrew challenges. I'll stick to just drinking it. You know, it's okay. I'm okay with that.
And what's going on? We've got this special homebrew.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. It's a brand new year, and we're rapidly approaching Homebrew Alley, which is now in its ninth year. This is Homebrew Alley 9. It's the city's biggest homebrew competition. This year, I think we're looking at about 700 entries from across the city, state, and even beyond. We have a deadline for entries. We still have a couple slots left. We have about 50 or 60 slots left. So if you want to still enter and you're listening, get your beers in. Visit homebrewalley.com. And we've got some great prizes, great sponsors, people like Jimmy's Number 43, Alewife.
We've had people come from Syracuse to drop off beers.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, the competition, you know, it's a great chance to get feedback on your brews. Again, there's great prizes. The one of the winning beers will be brewed as a 15-barrel batch at 6 Point. Kind of a really cool opportunity for homebrewer anywhere. So
who won last year? Because we had the six. It was called the Homebrew Pills.
Yeah, there was a guy named 6 Point. Peter. Gosh, I'm blanking on his last name. He had an amazing Bohemian Pilsner, and he's got an amazing mustache. This guy's truly like a legend. You know, he's old time. You know, probably in his 60s, and it's been doing lagers forever, and brewed this really killer Bohemian Pilsner that was, you know, on that Pilsner Urquell level of greatness. So
this is one of the better homebrew competitions in the city.
And yeah, it absolutely
awesome.
Is. And, you
know, and I'd recommend you guys go make a visit up to Be United's compound in Connecticut, go to the OEC and check it out. And Mateus, one last thing. So for homebrewers, you have a special thing on Monday. What is Sati? You've got someone from Finland coming in. It's like a whole other type of fermented beverage.
I would love to try Sati.
Yeah, Sati is one of the really historic beverages. It historically and still mostly brewed, maybe only brewed in Finland. And there is this wonderful, wonderful guy or person called Pekka. And he established his own brewery, Lammin Sati, in 1985. And in 1987, he started to sell his Sati. Now, Sati is an extraordinary beverage because it's so simplistic, or not so simple, yet so complicated. It doesn't travel. And the reason for that is quite the following. You you do not boil it. When you brew sadi, there is no boil. So all the bacteria, all the microbes that you bring in through your malt are still alive. Then you loader the wort over tunable branches. That brings in obviously a ton of wonderful tunable flavors and aromas, but it brings in even more bacteria in there. You do not use any hops. You do not use any beer ale yeast. You use actually baker's yeast. And we just received today via overnight mail his original finish baker's yeast, chunks of yeast or so, which is fantastic. I just got for Michael. We were desperately looking for that original juniper branches that we need for Monday. And Pekka is coming. He will arrive on Wednesday night, and he will be with us on Monday. We will brew his original sadi at OSC in Oxford, following the original recipe, the original ingredients, and Ben, who owns OSC, is already in full panic mode because somebody after the Lord Ring, he has to climb into his mesh tun, into his Lord Ring tun, and somebody has to clean it, get rid of all the tunable branches and twigs that are in there.
So if they don't boil it, is this called cold brewing?
No, it's not really.
That's not. Isn't that funny?
It's obviously not cold brewing, but it's the fermentation itself will last about 3 days, and then it will be cold matured for about 10 days. The liquid has got to stay below 34-35 degrees Fahrenheit at any moment in time. Otherwise, if it gets over 35 degrees, it will activate all the millions of bacteria and microbes in it. The idea is that Union Beer will send one of their reefer trucks up there as soon as it's ready to go. Will ship down the kegs, will drop it directly at the accounts, at the on-premise accounts that are interested in participating. And they promise us that they will tap it the same night or the following night. However, it has got to be in their cold box 100% along the way.
Right away. Well, that's brilliant. And we'll be up there, and it's really exciting. So, hey, this has been a great show. Unfortunately, we have to cut it off. Give a quick shout-out. New York City Beer Week is coming up. Check out our big event, New York City Brewer's Choice, on February 24th. And a lot more going on, newyorkcitybeerweek.com. And our good friends, you know, January 23rd is Charlie Papazian's birthday. You know, and he years ago, we had officially named National Pie Day, and our good friends at Bitter and Esther's are hosting something on this Friday night, January 23rd, in his honor. It's a pie and a homebrew event, so Bitter and Esther's always doing something. But we've had some great guests on the show last year. Charles Papazian's on. Mateus is the second time we're doing a show. So we love what we're doing. We love heritageradionetwork.org. And just check us out. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Mateus, Justin, Michael, and Zach for joining me here. And George, too, on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy. Our engineer, Jack Inslee. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.